Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. I'm going to stop right there for a second for this reason. The news behind the news includes telling some hard truths, and we're going to talk about a couple hard truths here in the first 20 minutes of the show today, especially the hard truths that some people don't want to admit are true, something we call normalcy bias, the idea that things will continue the way they always have continued, and we all suffer from that. We all do, and we got to guard ourselves against it every single day. But the fact of the matter is that normalcy bias is a psychological condition that prevents us actually from loving our neighbors better and preparing for things in the future. And we need to have a talk on this show today, a discussion about this issue, and I'm going to bring it up with my guests a little bit later, the idea of religious liberty, but the idea that we are literally approaching a place where we could have an underground church in the United States of America, not just around the world. And my good friend and patriot, who has Radio Free Readout as a program airing on this station on the weekend, great, great patriot, has put out an entire series on the Underground Church. And this is actually something that members of the Underground Church in other countries of the world that are currently persecuted unmercifully are using right now to keep themselves safe and continue to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and make disciples. And so, folks, if you have a pastor that you know that knows the truth, knows that this is very likely coming to the United States, and that a significant portion of the population, unfortunately, has bought into the socialist lie and the anti-Christian rhetoric, some of the tips in this Underground Church project will be very, very helpful to those people. And to pastors preparing now to do things that are advantageous if that ever does happen. Looking into the future and saying, you know, we can actually structure some things in our church to do this too. And one of the things I love about the Slavic community here is they've suffered persecution. And they really rely on small groups, with the church being a bunch of small groups that meet together on Sunday, as kind of the model. And also one of the interesting things is allowing younger people to actually preach, to practice, in case maybe the senior leadership gets arrested of the church. There's still somebody to preach the Word of God. And that's actually what happened in Russia, in Ukraine, Belarusia. And so this is something that we need to talk about, and it's something that a lot of people say, this will never happen here. If you catch yourself saying that in your mind, especially right now, it's happened everywhere else in the world but America. We are the exception to the general rule of the world, of history. So we need to get past all that and start taking responsibility for preparing, for loving our neighbor, for being the Christian witness in any circumstance, upon ourselves, at the family, at the individual level. And what I've seen happen, in not just in this area, but in all areas of our lives, we seem to think that the solutions may come from Washington, D.C. or Olympia. They don't. Our hope truly is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we just can't be praying. We need to move to action. Christianity is about action. It demands action if we're following our Lord and Savior. Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. The ancient path was one of individual responsibility, preparing, loving your neighbor, being able to preach the gospel in any circumstance, preparing yourself mentally for it, and not being this person that thinks It could never happen here. Could you imagine if the apostles if the apostles thought that? That persecution will never happen here from the Romans. So, folks, we need to get past it. And in this Underground Church Project, I am posting it up on Patriot Radio's Facebook page right now. You can take a look at it. And it is well worth the time and very small amount of money to go through that. And better yet, have your pastor go through it and look at it and be prepared yourself as well. Which brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing in the international front, and a lot going on, and I'm going to try to go through this as fast as I can. I really want to save some time for our guest today, who is a phenomenal lady. But we have a lot going on, and the first is in Turkey. So there was this alleged coup in Turkey, and now there's this mass humiliation and purge of the military. Some agencies in Turkey were purged by like 15,000 people. So they have large bureaucracies there too, apparently. Purging people out of these government agencies. And what some people are alleging is that this was a fake coup. This was a coup done intentionally so that Erdogan could consolidate power there. Now, he is a closet jihadist. Let's not use the word closet. He is a jihadist sympathizer. I think it's been fairly well established and very well documented. I mean, ISIS is coming into Turkey and running oil into Turkey, for goodness sakes. So, Erdogan believes that he needs to consolidate power right now and has purged some of the military, a lot of the military, of the senior leadership, and some of his government departments as well. And the Turkish military has always been what they view a guardian of the secular constitution. They've always been that. And there have been periodic coups in Turkey when the government has gone off the rails and away from that idea of that secular constitution from Ataturk after World War I. So right now what we're seeing is something very bad, and that is a consolidation of power and in a slant more jihadist in Turkey. So keep your eye on that. That is another flashpoint, and I've said this, in fact, I said this a couple years ago on this show, that watch what happens in Turkey, and you can kind of get an idea for what's going to happen in the Middle East. And what we're seeing right there now is consolidation of power and more leanings toward the jihadists. Also on the international front, South China Sea, again, a lot of U.S. assets down there, an arbitrator ruling in Europe that China does not have claim to the land or islands that they're trying to claim. The Chinese continuing to expand influence and a lot of bluster coming out of China. I mean, there is a lot. Now, General Vallely seems to think it's just bluster, but it is coming pretty strong out of China. Don't mess with us or you're going to start a war. Also on the international front, more terror in France, 70-plus dead, actually 80-plus dead now. And I want to mention, too, there was a little bit of confusion on that fire at the Eiffel Tower, and I haven't heard anything other than it was firework-related, but there was a lot of confusion right as it was happening on the radios, just as I got on the radio last time. But we do know this. It was ISIS again. And this bloodbath across the world. One city they've mentioned was San Francisco that nothing has happened in yet. So keep your eyes on this. I mean, this continues to happen. More people continue to die with this lack, this tepid, wimpy lack of leadership coming out of the Obama administration, emboldening our enemies and really intentionally, I think, trying to tear America apart. And I'll get to that here in a second. Which brings us to the national front. A lot of things happening, but first and foremost, I want to talk about the Black Lives Matter, the new Black Panthers. Folks, it is the same old foe we are facing, okay? There's all this attempt to divide us, to divide people against law enforcement against the people, people against, you know, by race, people by class, people by gender. Folks, it is the same old foe. It is the Fabian socialists. Those are the socialists that believe in incremental takeover. It is the same Marxists, the same ones, the ones who infiltrated through the KGB in Russia, the PLO, and a lot of the modern jihadist organizations, and turned them toward the idea of terror to be a buffer against the United States of America. This is all laid out in a book called Disinformation by General Mihai Pacepa, the highest-ranking KGB defector to the United States. He lays it all out, names names, names countries, what they did, how they infiltrated, which groups they infiltrated. And he also mentioned then, he warned the United States that they'd infiltrated our media, they'd infiltrated liberal organizations here. And the Black Panthers, Black Lives Matter, they are all tied to Marxist people and elements. And this is coordinated, folks. This is not some random event happening around the country in various spots. This is a coordinated effort. And these people are funded predominantly by George Soros, among others. But it's the same old foe, the same old enemy. It's Marxists. Whether we're talking the jihadist issue or whether we're talking the Black Lives Matter issue. And I will tell you something else. If you don't believe that, one of the foremost jihadist sympathizers here in America, in a speech a couple of weeks ago, said that Black Lives Matter is our matter as Muslims. So they are tied together. They admit publicly they're tied together, and we need to keep focused on who the real enemy is here. And the Constitution should unite us. It should bring us together on the other side of this coin. And we should be praying for law enforcement as well. Which brings us to the next thing on the national front. Another police officer gunned down in Kansas. As I understand it, here only a couple of hours ago. Please say a prayer for him and his family. But folks, this is happening. And it's going to continue to happen because they want to literally destroy this country. There are people that sit with beady little eyes in dark corners of the United States, literally plotting the destruction of this country, because this is the last great beacon of freedom in the world. They know it, and they want to destroy it, because they can't control it. They can't control you and I. And we cannot, I'm gonna stop there, and we cannot forsake the Constitution in order to save it either. In other words, ignore the Fourth Amendment in order to save the Constitution. That doesn't work that way. The Constitution was made in emergencies for emergencies. It literally was written in an emergency and was written exactly for emergencies so that government, even in the most dire circumstance, would not violate those God-given unalienable rights. That's the whole purpose behind it. It was especially to bind down government in times of crisis. So I want to stop there for a second too, because one thing that's come up on the national front is this new push for civil asset forfeiture and the use of what are called ERAD devices, E-R-A-D, ERAD devices. These things literally can be used to seize your bank account. Again, no due process, no trial, no jury saying you're guilty. Boom, your money is gone. So this is a new escalation of the use of civil asset forfeiture using these ERAD devices. And it's unbelievable. We cannot forsake the Constitution to try to save it. As Lavoie Finicum actually put, I was reading a book by him, he put, your needs do not create a right. Your needs do not create a right for you. And so we really need to keep that in mind. We need to keep it in mind. and not be so pragmatic that we sell our souls out. Which brings us to the next thing on the national front. Once again, push for gun control. Now, folks, don't be so worried about Black Lives Matter either that we miss the point of the whole coordination of all these events happening around the country. The coordination is to have a manufactured backlash against our unalienable rights. In other words, the government wants to use all these things as an excuse now for more gun control. Use all of these things as an excuse now to eviscerate the Fourth Amendment. Use all of these things to destroy what's left of the Constitution. The Obama administration wants to use these things for that reason. That's why you heard one of the most classless speeches down in Dallas. I mean, not even really focused on the grief of the families or having any class, just pushing the agenda. Well, there's bodies sitting in front of him, for goodness sakes, of people that gave the last full measure of devotion. So now one of these pushes has just come up. It's a new background check rule at the federal level. And I think that I think we're just going to continue to see the incremental attempt. You're going to see background checks next on ammunition. You're going to see, you know, like we're seeing in Seattle, you're going to see these taxes on ammunition, taxes on more taxes on guns, gun parts, gun accessories. You're going to see all of that. And it's not going to let up unless we take freedom back at the local level. It's just not. And interestingly enough, this new background check rule by the ATF, a lot of people just kind of accept it as, oh, that's just the way it's going to be. But here's the scary part. It is titled Background Checks for Responsible Persons. Okay, so these are people that are going to be going into business, they're going to be dealing with firearms, but it's background checks for responsible persons. Wait a minute. They're responsible people. Why are we doing background checks? So they're even admitting that they're targeting law-abiding citizens with this language here. Which brings us to the next thing on the national front, and that is non-law-abiding citizens like Hillary Clinton or maybe even the police chief down in Portland, still not in jail, not indicted, government above the law. And yet, groups like the Center for Western Priorities put out a report that if you believe that the land belongs to the people at the local level, that that's somehow seizing land, even though this public land in a lot of cases was seized from private ranches, like in the case of the Mueller Refuge, also in the case of Turnbull outside of Spokane, that all of a sudden you're an extremist. And they're trying literally to demonize the next group that they want to literally imprison or kill. I mean, we've seen this throughout history. But the Western Priorities report relied on a now debunked story from the Oregon Public Broadcasting about some nefarious conspiracy down in Oregon. And I'm conclusively disproven, by the way. So you see how all of this kind of wraps together? It all ties together. The demonization on the one side, the incremental approach on the others, and them trying to divide people so much and confuse people so much that they don't know who's really doing all this. It's the Marxists, folks. Real simple. On the regional front, SeaTac, $18-plus million settlement. Now, I went down and testified at SeaTac a few months ago and told them that all these government grants they were taking, especially these community development block grants, come with the huge strings attached. They actually delegate authority to this body that's unelected of bureaucrats, and they set the cities up for lawsuits. Well, the liberal members of the council treated me shamefully, said this will never happen. Our legal counsel is just fine here, right? Well, their legal counsel was just fine to a loss to the taxpayers of $18-plus million. Thank you to Glenn Morgan for all the work he's done on exposing this stuff. It was an $18.3 million jury verdict. I think it might be the largest in state history on that issue. So anyway, there you go. all government money, from at least the feds, comes with strings attached. And legal counsel in these cities don't oftentimes give good advice. And so we need to, as the people, be the government of the people again and really weigh in on these issues. Also on the regional front, Washington State, number one in property crimes. Folks, we have got to reprioritize. They tried to get rid of the property crimes unit for the Washington State Patrol here a couple years ago. And so we battled for a couple years and finally got the funding back into it. Folks, it is the things you have to focus on are property crimes, prosecuting those, and warrant enforcement. You do those two things and you crack down on the criminal elements. Usually about 5%, maybe a little higher, that are responsible for all of the bad stuff going on in an area. And that means if it's a priority to prosecute these things, it's a priority to arrest and investigate property crimes, you also have another benefit, and that is benefit to businesses who are not losing money over. But as many business owners here in Spokane know, a lot of these things don't get investigated. And also a lot of business owners that have done their own investigation know that there are not enough officers out there right now to help prioritize property crimes. So we got to make sure that we're being smart about this stuff. But right now, I mean, that's a horrible statistic to our great shame. Also on the regional front, the Twin Falls City Council melts before questioning over this whole thing with the rape of a five-year-old girl. And they started arguing, well, it's not really a rape. And what? You have a little girl that was totally victimized. You're still withholding the medical records and the 911 calls from her mom? Really? Well, the citizens down there are just as irate, and they're holding them accountable, and a great job by Heather Scott over there in Idaho to keep the pressure up down there. In fact, some of the legislators are trying to threaten over this issue instead of do the right thing and make sure that this is prosecuted. Also on the regional front, land fights in Washington, in particular, 8-inch stubble, the new regulation that they want for range management up there in Northeast Washington. You come out with a yardstick and then fine ranchers if it's under 8 inch, and obviously a cow is going to know exactly where the 8-inch limit is. See how ridiculous this stuff is? Unbelievable. Last but not least, on the local front, we're going to be doing a tour of Hanford, actually, next week. Myself and several other representatives and some people that might have an innovative solution to some remediation of the contaminated soil down there. And that actually is growing hemp, if you can believe that. May actually help to remediate the soil. So we're going to be doing some investigation and touring Hanford and let you guys know how that goes. And last but not least, on the local front, my election recommendations are up online right now. I'm going to post them up on Patriot Radio. But it's real simple. Just go to VoteShay.com, go under Solutions, and right there you'll see Matt's take on elections. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us and sending in money and just well wishes. I really appreciate all that. And thank you to everybody also that's been going to Facebook/Patriot Radio US and liking the page and sharing it with their friends and family. We keep adding a lot of folks and a lot more people listening to Patriot Radio due to your efforts. So thank you. If you can take the time to do that, please do so. Well, it's my honor to introduce my guest today, Mary Ruth Edwards, candidate for the 16th Legislative District down near Prosser and Walla Walla. Current city councilwoman down there in Prosser, also a Marine Corps veteran. Mary Ruth, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Thanks for having me today, Matt.
Well, if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about your family. I mean, this is a key, well, let me back up. This is a key race, right? I mean, we had a very liberal member of the House who's now moving up to the Senate. Mm-hmm. This could be a pickup for conservatives down there in that area of the state.
Yes, most definitely.
Well, if you can, tell the listeners a little bit about your family and a little bit about your background as well. I love you when you tell your story because everybody's got a great story. You got a really great story.
Oh, thanks. Well, I guess starting at the beginning, I was an Army brat and, started out in Southern California, ended up in Texas. When my dad was killed in the Vietnam War, my mom decided to locate up here in Washington to be near her parents. My grandfather was a pastor and had taken a church up here. So we moved to Marysville, Washington. And I started third grade there. And, you know, this Common Core stuff, I'm going to throw some of this in. This Common Core, one of the reasons for developing it, they said, was because, you know, oh, all of these kids, they move in the middle of the school year, and that's just so terrible. They get so far behind. Well, I went to a different school from kindergarten until seventh grade, and I turned out okay. Anyway, so I ended up graduating from Everett High School because back then the way the levy systems worked, the Marysville School District, the levies had failed for like 10 years in a row, and they were in danger of losing their accreditation. So my mom and we did try and find another house, another city to move to, but weren't able to do so. So my brother and I, at that time, my older brother, we ended up going into Everett High School. By the time my little brothers started high school, the levies had started passing again. So they were able to graduate from Marysville, but I graduated from Everett High School. That was after I spent a year in Germany as an exchange student, and that was quite an eye-opening experience to see how people in other parts of the world lived. I lived in both northern and southern Germany and got to spend some time in eastern Germany. That was really an eye-opener. And that was before the wall had come down. So that tells you a little bit how old I am. It was about 10 years before the wall came down. And then, let's see, what else? Went to school when I was 25, joined the Marine Corps, spent some time in Paris Island at boot camp. And I was actually the second unit, the second battalion to go through the same exact training as the men. So 13 weeks of training. And, had lots of fun, actually. I know most people say boot camp, that was fun, but I really did. I really enjoyed boot camp. It was a challenge, and I really found out what I was made of. And then was stationed at Camp Pendleton, met my husband there, got married. After a couple of years, I had messed up my knee, and so I got medicaled out, which I actually fought that discharge because I was still able to do my job. But if you know the Marines at all, unless you are combat ready, you cannot stay in. So they considered that I was not combat ready. So even though the spirit was willing, the flesh was weak, I guess. So got out, had my son. When my son was 3 weeks old, my husband was shipped off to the first Persian Gulf War. And he was gone about 9 months. And his unit was actually the second unit to cross the border when the ground war was declared. And, you know, that was the first war where we got to see everything live on TV. And so that was kind of a stressful period of time for me because I was worried the same thing would happen to him that had happened to my dad. But luckily he came home when my son was about 9 months old. And, he got out in December, I think it was December that of 1990, must have been 91. And when I was 2 months pregnant with my daughter, my son was 18 months old, he decided he needed to move on with his life and didn't want responsibility of wife and child. So for the next 20 years, I raised my children on my own. Went back to school, got my bachelor's of science degree, and, you know, was a single mom raising my kids. And in 2003, I think it was, I lost my job at the phone company. They had a layoff. And so I thought, well, what do I need? You know, what am I going to do? I'm this business thing. I'm getting kind of tired of that. And in my family, you're either a preacher, a teacher, or a missionary. Well, I kind of looked at a couple of those and decided, well, maybe I should go back to school and be a teacher. So I went back to school and got my teaching certificate. And during that time, my parents had moved over to Prosser and started a bed and breakfast. And we spent every possible moment, every weekend over here that we possibly could, because, you know, this side of the mountains is truly God's country. And I go back over to the other side every once in a while and think, what? Why would I even think about coming back over here? But
I do every time I come back from Olympia. Right?
Oh, yeah, I know. And I'm thinking, I really want to go to Olympia in the worst possible time of the year. But anyway, it'll just make homecoming that much more fun. Well, anyway, so right before I got my teaching certificate, my dad said, hey, there's this little house down the street that's for sale. If we buy it, will you move here? That was like a no-brainer. So my daughter started eighth grade and my son started 10th grade at Prosser High School. They both graduated from there. You know, I got hired on at the Prosser School District and taught fourth grade for a while, I was a reading specialist for a while, and last year became a first grade teacher. So I tell people when they ask me, what do you do for a living? I say, I herd cats, because that's kind of what it's like.
And again, you want to go to Olympia and herd a larger?
Yeah, I know. What is that? I don't know. Just recently, my son actually 4 years ago joined the Marines, and right before the Monday before he graduated boot camp, his son was born. And so I was able to go down to his graduation, and we flew back together. And so both of us got to meet his son when the baby was 5 days old. And then he had to, of course, go back to combat training and all that good stuff. Well, they ended up being stationed in Camp Lejeune. And so over the first probably 3 years of my grandson's life, I got to see them about four times. So I was very happy when in February, Daniel got out of the Marine Corps and relocated here to Spokane. And so they're way closer, and my grandson turns 4 on Saturday. So I'm up here today because it gave me an excuse to come visit my grandson and, well, you know, my son and his wife too, but really my grandson. And he turns 4 on Saturday, so I get to come back up on Saturday too. And then my son's birthday is like a week later, so, you know, I should just move to Spokane. But then I couldn't really serve in the legislature for the 16th district, so I think I got to rethink that one.
And believe me, we need help down there with the 16th district, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, we do.
We got, you know, there's one great person down there, Terry Neely. I've worked with mm-hmm. him on many different things.
He's on the finance committee too, isn't he?
He is, yeah. The problem has been and she admits she's a liberal. I talked to her, you know, mm-hmm. I've talked to her quite a bit. We have a good relationship.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really doesn't reflect necessarily the conservative nature of rural, you know, southern Washington like that.
That's true. If you look at the votes in the last couple of elections, specifically the vote for same-sex marriage, our district overwhelmingly voted against it. And, you know, she voted for it, so... It was kind of,
well, and here's the thing too, the lot of the, you know, your opponents in the race mm-hmm. want to take up this continued mantle of liberalism down an area that's just not liberal. It's just not.
It's not. No, I would have to agree. I think overwhelmingly, I mean, you do have to look at Walla Walla has two universities. There's Walla Walla University in College Place, and there's also Whitman University. And so I think you see a lot of liberal thought coming out of some of those institutions. But I think overall, most of the people are conservative. I would be a good representative of our district in that way. I firmly believe that when I am elected, I'm elected to represent the people. And, you know, I hear a lot of talk about, well, I have to vote my conscience. Well, you know, I think you need to look at, okay, what are the people asking me to do? How are they asking me to vote? Are they asking me to do something that's unconstitutional, unethical, immoral? And if it's any of those three, then regardless of what my personal feelings are, I think I need to, you know, vote as the people are requesting. But again, if it's unethical, immoral, or unconstitutional, I can't.
Well, let's talk about some of the conservative values that are down there, and let's talk about some issues that are pretty key. We're 2 votes away from a majority mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives right now. We came 2 votes away from defunding abortion in Washington State.
Yeah.
Huge issue. Where are you at on the right to life?
I am I believe in the right to life from the moment of conception until natural death. I don't believe that there is really any instance where abortion is justified. With the medical technology we have today, I believe that every opportunity should be made to save the baby and the mother. So I don't, you know, abortion should be off the table. It should not be, I don't know that it should be made. I hate every time I hear the numbers of how many babies have not had the chance to take their first breath. It's appalling. It's appalling to me that this country has such a disregard for life. That, you know, when we
get the,
go ahead, I'm
we
sorry.
Get the life issue wrong, we get every other issue wrong. And
exactly.
You know, I I have not met a mother to this day who would not rather give her life for a child instead of the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was a matter of her health and life versus her baby's health and life.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of this out there that really is not accurate about, you know, the mother's health is threatened. Very rare instances that even occurs.
True.
And in those rare instances, I think you hit the nail on the head that the technology is out there mm-hmm. That really kind of takes that off the table.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I have not immediate personal experience about this, but I have a nephew who was born at 24 and a half weeks. And, you know, he weighed less than 2 pounds. And my brother's wedding ring just, you know, fit very loosely over his upper arm. I mean, this was a tiny, tiny baby who fought for his life from the very moment that he was born. And, you know, yet he's grown up, he's married, he works at Boeing, he's got a great job, you know, and that child could, I mean, we abort children at that age and even later. And I just can't even believe, how can anybody think that that's just a clump of cells? I don't know.
Now, Human Life Pack usually weighs in on races. Mm-hmm. Where are they at in your race?
I have been endorsed by them.
So that means that you are the only endorsed candidate by Human Life Pack in that race for the 16th district, as I understand it.
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're kind of the gold standard anywhere in the state. So that's mm-hmm. that's terrific. Well, let's shift to the other big issue, and that's the defense of human life with mm-hmm. the right to bear arms. The idea that we can defend ourselves against tyranny, we can defend ourselves against criminals. We actually have this unalienable right. Where are you at on the right to bear arms?
Well, you want me to get out my concealed carry permit for you?
I figured.
I had to leave my AR-15 at home. Sorry. It's one of those. Without the second, we don't have any of them. We seriously have none of the others. If we can't protect ourselves and our families, this is another thing. I was at a Tea Party candidate forum last night, and I was asked where I stand on it. And one of the things that ties into the Second Amendment is gun-free zones, and we need to eliminate every single one of them. I am a teacher, and I have parents and grandparents that send their children to me every morning, expecting me to send them back a little bit better every night. And I can't guarantee that, because I can't guarantee that I can protect them, because I am not allowed to carry. I'm not allowed to have a gun dismantled in a safe in the trunk of my car in the parking lot of my school. And yet parents who are dropping off and picking up their children, they're more than welcome to carry, but I can't. And I'm a teacher, and I'm the one. I'm not saying that I need to go out and have a gunfight in the hallway. I need to be with my children. But if somebody breaches the doorway of my room, I should be able to protect my children that are sent into my care every single day. And I can't. And my son, when he was serving in the military, and where he lived and worked, he was not allowed to carry or to have, you know, that just is appalling to me. These guys put their life on their lines on, excuse me, their lives on the line for us. And we don't allow them to protect themselves on their own base. That is just insane.
Well, here's the interesting part about all this. Every single terrorist attack that's been happening
mm-hmm.
could have been stopped immediately with a person with a gun.
Yeah.
And ultimately was stopped.
Yeah.
Sometimes, unfortunately, hours later, after dozens of people are killed, with a person with a gun.
Well,
I mean, it's just simple.
And at my school, we have signs plastered everywhere. This is a weapons-free zone. Not just guns. We can't have weapons at all. I can't even have wasp spray in my room, just in case, you know. I mean, it's crazy. They should just have signs up that say, you know, here we are, Burgess Ducks, duck shooting time. You know, it's just crazy.
So. Yeah, that it is, and it's unnerving. But at the same time, though, the government, especially the federal government,
mm-hmm.
believes that we can have a lot more technology than you can. And one of those technologies that's being used, well, there's actually a myriad of them, but is drones, the whole surveillance state idea.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you at with these kind of anti-liberty type of things, and how do you think we should be fighting against it?
Well, I think we should be able to shoot them out of the sky, number one. I anything that impairs our liberty is a no-go in my opinion. And we need to get the people to remember or to learn that, you know, our Constitution at the federal level, but more specifically at our state level, Article 1, Section 1 says all political power is inherent in the people. And it goes on, and I only have that first part actually memorized, but it's essentially we get to decide. We're the ones who delegate to you, Matt Shea, a little bit of authority to govern this state. But it's only a little bit. And we, the people, need to come up. We need to make a loud voice and, you know, tell our legislators, no, this is not allowed. You cannot infringe on our freedoms this way. It's, you know, we have to stand up for ourselves because nobody else is gonna. So we have to be vocal. I keep hearing people say, well, how did we get to this point where, you know, we have, we have to let people of a different biological gender who identify as a different gender use our locker rooms. And how did we get there? It's because we haven't spoken up. We haven't. We've just kind of let it go and kind of let things just kind of whatever, let life go on. And we're not paying attention. And it's to our detriment. Everybody needs to be paying attention and stepping up and speaking up when things are going south, because all of a sudden we are on a really slippery slope and things are really seemingly accelerating.
And it's and thank you for saying that. I'm gonna end the show with this, but I want to kind of give a real quick highlight. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are trying to put their hope in one presidential candidate when in fact, at the state and local level, it's really up to us to restore the republic, because there's so many bureaucrats out there. There's so much entrenched rules and regulation. We have to do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Mary Ruth Edwards, candidate for 16th District State Representative, also City Councilwoman down in Prosser, and a great freedom fighter and a teacher, too, which is what a great calling that is. Well, Mary Ruth, if you could, you know, drones have been used for all kinds of different things. But what really shocked me was when our governor said to my face, 3 feet away from me, that he wanted to use drones to start mapping the bulkheads of the coast of Washington State, and implied that he was going to later use them, or DOE was going to later use them, Department of Ecology, to map our ranches and spy on our farmers. And I have a huge problem with that just from a surveillance side. But let's talk about property rights. This is part of the kind of gradual erosion of property rights. Mm-hmm. Where are you on property rights, and what are kind of the key issues for you down there in the Prosser Walla Walla area?
Well, Glenn actually had Glenn Morgan come speak at a fundraiser a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, he's the executive director of the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. And the government needs to keep their nose out of our business. It's to what purpose do they need to map our ranches? I mean, what's the purpose of it? Why do they even care? It's like, you know, it's this slow creep, because they start doing stuff like that, then they're going to start using it against us. I know that a couple of years ago, during the last race, there was I think it was the Department of Ecology again, there was a rancher over by Walla Walla, and he had a creek that ran through his property. And the Department of Ecology said, oh, you have to fence off your creek from your cattle, because when they go in there, they pollute the water. Really? It's a ranch. It runs through his land. Cattle need to have water because they die of thirst otherwise. But the Department of Ecology was trying to force him to put a fence to fence off his water from his cattle when it's a naturally occurring renewable resource. And they were, you know, why are they doing that? We need to protect our ranchers. We need to protect our farmers from the government. We shouldn't have to protect ourselves from the government. The government is there to protect our rights, not take our rights.
And that is a seizure without any compensation. So you're literally saying, fence off your property, you cannot use it for the economically viable purpose you were using it for, but you don't get any money.
Right. Yeah. It makes no sense. It's a matter of control.
You know, and it gets so frustrating, too, because, you know, I hear it every day. I mean, I get emails literally every day from somebody, and I brought up this issue of range stubble, you know.
Oh, yeah. eight inches? Yeah.
Eight inches, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have ranchers, you have farmers, you have vineyards down there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some great wine down in that region.
Mm-hmm.
How is this? I mean, this is going to impact folks down there, I would think, tremendously. What are people telling you about their stories?
You know, that they want the government off their back. You know, they're tired of having, you know, people just... Uncle Sam looking over their shoulder, not even Uncle Sam, but, you know, Jay Inslee looking over their shoulder and trying to find ways to keep them under their thumb. And, you know, they're not allowed the freedom to run their businesses as they feel they should. The government is coming in and telling them, you know, when to stand up, when to sit down. I mean, that's what it feels like a lot of times. I know we're experiencing that in our city council, even. We have bizarre federal departments trying to tell us how to run our city, and that's just, you know, the government just seems to like to take it and run with it and try and do it as showing that, well, we're trying to help. Well, no, what's that? Wasn't that Ronald Reagan who said that?
Yes, it was.
We're from the government. We're here to help. Yeah, I don't think so.
But, you know, and that's the thing. We're supposed to be the government, the people,
right,
of the people.
Right.
It's supposed to be the people that's the government, you know,
right.
And this whole, which brings us to the next issue, the whole issue of rules and regulations. I mean, especially with property rights, everybody mm-hmm. seems to be guilty until proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody keeps saying to me, well, if you're innocent, you don't have anything to worry about. No, that is not the right. My comment to the government is, if you're innocent, you have nothing to worry about. You
exactly.
don't have to worry about all these restrictions that we're going to place on you, right?
Right.
So where are you at on regulations and rules?
We need to have as few as possible. It seems to be the people who are making the rules are so far removed from it, they have no conceivable idea what impact that actually has. You know, we've got unelected bureaucrats making, you know, rules that other people are supposed to abide by. You know, I think that's my biggest problem is, who is making the rules and regulations? Are they elected officials? Is it actually the legislature? Or is it these departments who just decide that, oh, we have a lot of power and we exist to only, you know, increase our share of the budget. I just keep seeing that over and over. And Glenn Morgan actually was very instrumental in demonstrating that as well, that these agencies only exist really to just increase their size. They're not really willing to go out there and actually solve the problem. They just want to be able to grow their numbers and get a bigger piece of the pie. And so they're far removed from the people that they're actually writing regulations and rules. You know, they're not having to live by them. Doesn't seem like it. It's like, do as I say, not as I do.
Well, that's exactly right. And then bring us to the final thing. They always ask for more taxes, right? You know, and, you know, back it up a little bit. I mean, people have to understand that this come out through depositions that they literally, some agencies have quotas of mm-hmm. fines to give out so they meet their revenue projections, right? I mean, it's kind of like traffic tickets, right?
Right.
So, and then they're asking yet for more taxes. Where are you mm-hmm. at on the tax issue? And how do you think we can roll all of this stuff back? I mean, what are some ideas you have?
Okay. So, number one, I hate that the default is always, oh, we have to raise taxes. That's the default. That's like the knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we have to raise taxes. Well, no. You know, I signed a pledge from the taxpayers, or what is that one called? Sorry, it's in my car right now.
Yeah, taxpayer protection pledge.
Yes,
it's
thank you.
Americans for...
For tax reform. Americans for tax
go.
Reform. Thank you. I signed that last week again. I signed it the last time I ran as also. But why is it the default always that we have to raise taxes? Because I think that we should be able to, with the population in the state is growing, that means our tax base is growing. We, you know, so our income is growing. You know, the revenues generated by taxes and everything because our population is growing. Why do we always have to say, oh, we have to raise taxes? How about we put sunset clauses on every tax so that it has to be revisited? And if that tax is no longer necessary, then it gets retired. And if it needs to be reauthorized, then it needs to get voted on to be reauthorized. I always say, I like Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey is this awesome guy. He's the budget guru. And I think that, I would love to say that, everybody, if you get elected to legislature, you got to pass his course. But I don't think that the taxes are increasing taxes or adding new ones is the way to go. If we if a tax is deemed necessary to continue to extend, then it needs to be voted on. But I think sunset clauses are a good idea, and we need to go back and look, are all of these taxes necessary? Why do we have to tax certain things? I mean, for every tax, every time you pass a tax, you need to look and make sure that there's not something that you can repeal.
That's exactly right. Well, Mary Ruth, if you could, in the last couple of minutes, if you can give a website where people can go to get more information for you, maybe even volunteer. If you're listening to this down in the Walla Walla, Prosser area, the Lower Valley down there, please, there is so much that needs to be done in campaigns, so many places you can help out. This is one of those places. Mary Ruth, if you could, give your website and also how people can volunteer best for you.
Okay, so my website is www.votemaryruth.com. So it's www.votemaryruth.com. And ways that people can help, certainly, it goes without saying, financially is always a good thing, even if it's a dollar. I try very hard to use every penny wisely. Even more, I need help doorbelling. I have already run through a pair of shoes. I've had to buy a new pair of shoes because I wore holes in the last one. So it's, even if you can just go out for, a half an hour every day and talk to your neighbors, I've got materials I can send you, or I can drop by. If you're willing to put up a sign, that's always great. But the most important thing is tell your neighbors, tell your coworkers. If you're like me, I get people calling me all the time. I got my ballot. Who should I vote for? And like Matt put it out on his website, his recommendations. And I just haven't had a chance to get that out on mine. But I do have, people that call and ask me. And that's certainly a huge help, especially in the primary season. In my race, there are 4 Republicans and 1 Democrat running for 1 open seat. And so it's a pretty contested seat this time. I've always run against the incumbent, so it's a little bit different having to run against 4 other people. But word of mouth is great. If you can write letters to the editor, I always have people say, "Oh, but I don't know what to say." You know what? Just speak from your heart. It doesn't have to be long. Just tell them, "Vote for me." And why would you vote for me? What about me and my values do you think would make me an outstanding legislator? It's just very simple, very short, sweet, to the point. So all of those things are ways that you could help me, and I would really, really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate you and everything you're doing. And if you could, in 30 seconds, a real quick message to the youth. I know there's a lot of young people that feel disenfranchised, like they shouldn't vote, shouldn't be involved. Mm-hmm. What would be your message to them?
You can't change unless you can't change things unless you step up. And that means, get interested. Volunteer for a campaign. You know what? It's actually kind of a cool thing. I thought, oh, politics, that's just so boring. But you know what? You meet a lot of cool people. You have, it's a way to get your voice heard. My son and daughter-in-law, they're 25, 26. My daughter's 24. They always thought politics was horrible till mom got involved. And then they kind of rolled their eyes. But then when they started really looking into it, they found out, look, I have a voice. But the only way your voice is going to be heard is if you step up and you get involved. Find a candidate that meets your values. I can't tell you enough. The reason we are losing everything the way we are is because people either weren't educated or haven't bothered to get involved. They just figured, nope, that's for somebody else to worry about. Well, guess what? It's not. It's what everybody needs to worry about. So don't let your parents, don't let your bosses, don't let them rule the world. You get to rule the world through your voice and your participation. So I would encourage every young person to get involved. I met, just really quick, I met a little 9-year-old girl in Walla Walla who, her name is Gracie, and she and her family prayed for me at the 4th of July in the park. And she and I have continued our conversation since then, and we email back and forth. And this little girl at 9 years old is very interested in politics. In fact, her first thing that she ever wanted to be when she grew up was a congresswoman, because she met a congresswoman and got to talk with her and just thought it was just an amazing thing to be able to represent the people. So no matter how old you are, you can always get involved.
I love it. Very well said. Mary Ruth Edwards, running for 16th Legislative District down in Walla Walla. Vote Mary Ruth. And I have that web link posted up on Patriot Radio's Facebook side. Mary Ruth, please, please let me know how I can help you out. Terrific, terrific answers today.
Thank you.
And really thank you for coming on Patriot Radio. We'll have you on again sometime soon.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
All right.
God bless.
Folks, that is what we've got to do, is get involved at the local level. You can go and take a look at my recommendations online at VoteShea.com, Matt's Take on Elections. Just go to the solution bar up top, click on that, Matt's Take on Elections, and I have them all listed out. Now, there are a couple federal races that I've been researching. Mike Luke is the only pro-life candidate for the Senate race, even though he's a libertarian. So he's really looking like the guy that I'm going to be recommending. I've got to talk to him still face-to-face, but done a lot of research out there. And, you know, it really is at the state and local level we're going to turn things around. And Donald Trump is not on this ballot. People keep emailing me, why didn't you recommend Donald Trump? Look, folks, we have got to not put our hope in one presidential candidate. Our hope is in Jesus Christ. And working through us at the state and local level, we can restore a God-honoring constitutional republic. God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.